This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 7th of January, 1954. The title of this lecture is Anchor Points, Flows. This lecture is 51 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Okay, and this is the afternoon of January the 7th, 1954. I've been covering with you with great speed, the fundamentals which we are dealing with. And you may or may not be assimilating these fundamentals with great speed, but they're terrifically fundamental, and they're very precise. Anytime that we have something we're calling an exact definition, believe me, we mean it. Now, a physicist's definition is the closest thing to it, and his definitions break down as soon as he moves into the field of nuclear physics. Well, I haven't found any place where these break down. Now, that's a very adventurous statement to make, but I've been doing a terrific amount of investigation here in the last 25 years, and many times we had many factors which seem to explain a great many things. And in Dianetics, we had many factors which explained a great many things, but we didn't have our hands on all the factors. Now, I don't tell you right this minute that we have our hands on every possible high fundamental definition, but I do tell you those definitions which we have our hands on resolve any case I have walked into today. Now, what are these definitions? They are the definitions of symbol, the definition of communication, how cause and effect actually operate, what duplication is and how it applies to communication, what a communication lag is, the fact that theta can put things and locates things in space, and that it can create space and energy to locate in that space and form objects thereby. All of these are terrifically workable definitions. However, at the same time, simply because they are a lower order of importance, we do not throw away, because of these definitions, what we know in 8008, what we know actually in Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health. Now, let's take an example of this. Dianetics, Modern Science of Mental Health has a couple of chapters there, one in particular, which are quite important to him, and one of those is that one on hypnotism, the artificializing of aberration. That is to say, how you can lay in artificial aberrations into human beings. Now, if we take this on the basis of mesmerism, you know, and hypnotism, the physical report, or the Thetan, we have a pretty good picture of aberration. Now, we can apply duplication to this, and we see immediately why people won't look at things. We say all the time, look, don't think. Okay, if we say look, don't think, then why? What's the back of this? Well, they won't look at something, and as long as they refuse to look at this, they will remain aberrated by it. Because a lookingness is a kind of stoppingness. Lookingness imposes space on things. And thinkingness just wonders. All right, lookingness then imposes space. And when an individual can't impose space on something, he of course can't look at it. So it collapses on him. Well, he's all over the place anyway. And lookingness is actually done by being willing to be something, and then knowing where it is in space. That's the way lookingness is done. It's a very simple process. Now, the engineer comes along and he tells you it's done with photons. It isn't done with photons. The moment you start to agree that it's done with photons, you're done. Because you get immediately into flows. And I call your attention to 8008 and the doctor tapes. Into flows. We don't want our preclear into flows. Also, we don't want him in agreement with the mesh universe. Why don't we? Because the best universe agrees that the only way you ever get any energy is with two terminals. Well, the Thetan can create energy. Now, where does all this take us? It takes us immediately to the fact that we have a pretty full picture of this now, when we can take a chapter out of Book 1, which was the chapter which explained Book 1 in Aberration, and we see immediately the mechanics of that chapter by what we're doing right now. So we've got a pretty full cycle here. All right, how does duplication apply to this chapter about restimulators? The restimulator in the environment. Here we have the post-hypnotic suggestion. Hypnotist hypnotizes somebody and he says, now after this session, every time I touch my tie, you are going to take your coat off, and every time I let go of my tie, you are going to put your coat on. Okay, and then he wakes the fellow up. He tells the fellow, forget it, and so forth, and wakes him up. And then he touches his tie, and this fellow says, you know, it's sort of warm in here. And takes his coat off. Hypnotist let go of his tie. And the fellow says, well, it's a little cooler now, and puts his coat back on. And just touches his tie, and the fellow says, I don't know, I guess I wasn't too right about that, but this coat isn't well tailored. I guess I'll have to take it off and look it over. And he more and no more and gets it off, and the hypnotist lets go of his tie, and the fellow says, but it's all right, really, and one shouldn't sit around with his coat off. The fellow puts it on again. In other words, he's got a reason for it. And what's the reason? It's a looking signal that he can't look at. Why can't he look at it? Because while he was in an hypnotic state, he was made to not look. In other words, this one collapsed on him. He let this one in on him and then forgot that it had collapsed on him, and so he was a bundle of it. So the next thing he'll start to do, as he comes out of it, by the way, is, as he's made to look, you know, as the signal's used more and more, and he more explains more and more, and it makes him sillier and sillier, and he looks around. Actually, there's another thing about a post-hypnotic suggestion. The person can look around and see that he's doing something strange. So that makes him look. If there was nobody around telling him that he was doing something strange by the expressions on their faces and so forth, he would go on with that post-hypnotic suggestion to the end of his days. Well, it's not strange to go eat lunch. Nobody considers this strange. Matter of fact, they consider you rather strange if you never ate any lunches. And so there's nobody around telling you that it's strange to eat lunch. So eating this of lunches, of course, is nicely collapsed on you, and you go ahead and eat lunches. Now, as many other things are interwoven and interlocked here, and there's so many reasons that anchor in between so much agreement upon these things, that the second we start to take these things apart, why, other things bog down, and we get into an interesting condition where the fellow gets strange by being different. Now he's told that there's something wrong with him because he's omitting things, and people try to force him back into an agreement and eat lunch. But let's look at this post-hypnotic suggestion again, and let's actually examine the behavior of a hypnotized subject when this is used on him. The next thing he does is begin to find fault with the hypnotist's tone of voice. He's liable to find fault with a hypnotist's clothing, and then liable to find fault with the fact the hypnotist is moving around and appears to be nervous or something, and then all of a sudden spots this signal of touching the tie. All the time, this fellow, however, is obeying, taking his coat off and putting it back on again. Now, he finally spots this fellow touching his tie, and he says, oh, you told me that during a session, and it's no longer workable. In other words, by looking, he selects out, first there's something wrong with the room usually, and then there's something wrong with people in the room, and then something wrong with the hypnotist, and then something more wrong with the hypnotist, and then closer wrong with the hypnotist, and then a little closer than that, and all of a sudden, ping, the post-hypnotic suggestion is gone. Now, we can make a statement concerning humanity that will work out in processing, and work out very uniformly in processing. The trouble with humanity is that it doesn't need to be hypnotized. The trouble with humanity is it is hypnotized and needs to be unhypnotized. And if you could just unhypnotize your preclear suddenly and completely, why, you would have every effect which you will ever achieve by any other means right there. Now, you could unhypnotize him simply by making him look. See, there is a pat, demonstrable method of all theory aside. If you could just make him look long enough and wide enough and far enough, why, sure enough, you would have the fellow in good condition. He would be unhypnotized. And the other part of this is people are convinced. Now, remember I said in the doctor's tapes that the highest level of thought was, as far as aberration was concerned, would be conviction. He's convinced. And so that's the highest level, and it still is. All right, he's convinced of flows. Now, let's go right back to that. He's convinced of flows. Do you see the silly picture this immediately imposes upon lookingness? This is really silly. You could get down and hold your sides with laughter over this, and maybe you will someday. I've laughed it out. But here's what we have. We have that window. If I can see that window, we have this problem. Then it must be that the window is putting out a pattern image from there, closer to me, closer to me, closer to me, closer to me, and it's all the time reducing in some weird fashion. And it's reducing, and somehow or other it's received in the back of my head on some sort of a screen which I then perceive. But we have images of that window coming in, bang, 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 bang. There must be a lot of those images of the window coming in on me all the time. Well, you can put up a camera between here and the window, and sure enough, the camera will register the fact that an image of the window has gone in through the shutter and hit the film. In view of the fact that you have agreed upon the film, and agreed upon the light, and agreed upon this whole problem, and agreed upon the camera, and the camera is a camera, why, of course, it'll take a picture. So don't just throw this out because the camera takes the picture. You agreed on the camera, and you agreed on the picture, and when you see it later, why, you've agreed on it, and so on. Truth of the matter is that this becomes a slight idiocy. How many it would say that windows are traveling at 186,000 miles per second? Windows are traveling from that side of the wall to me at the rate of one full image at least every 25th of a second in order for me to see this. Oh, this starts to make a very complicated universe, doesn't it? All these things, all these pictures are going in all these directions at this speed simultaneously, and everything is doing this, and it's doing it on a 360-degree sphere, and we get something that's very funny indeed. It would become a solid mass. All of space would become a solid mass if this were happening the way it says it happens. Well, we haven't agreed that space becomes a solid mass, so it doesn't. We've just agreed on flows. Well, you get a preclear who's agreed on flows, and he will sit there and he'll run out flows and in flows, and he'll get stuck flows and this flows and that flows and so on. He'll have more fun with flows. Well, a hypnotized subject can mock up a kangaroo and have the kangaroo bite him and the teeth marks will appear. In other words, the hypnotized subject will have more fun with flows or more fun with kangaroos or more fun with anything you tell him to have fun with than you can readily think up in a hypnotizing afternoon. Now that is an interesting fact, isn't it? That you can tell a hypnotized subject anything, and he will then perceive it. Now I have carefully explained all about flows to a hypnotized subject. Explained to him how this was and got him to agree completely the way this was, and immediately afterwards had his body form completely alter. It was smashed so flat with so many incoming flows, and the complexity of the problem was so great, and his brains were so strained by the whole deal that he was becoming solid mass at a terrific rate of speed. So I unhypnotized him and tried to blow it. And of course, I couldn't blow it because it's set up as a very early basic automaticity and is the machine by which you set up this universe itself. And I couldn't blow it till I blew that machine. And then I blew that machine, and then I put the machine back again, and we were all right. And by the way, I did this rather rapidly because I did it hypnotized-wise. I hypnotized him and processed him in and out of this machine and so forth and around. When we finally wound up, he was just about the same way he was before, you see. I mean, we got him restabilized and squared around. And then I scanned out the session and knocked out all the rest of the things that had happened in the session, and we squared all that around. And we brought him out the other end. It's simply knowing he had been hypnotized and some strange things happened. He knew about those, and he wasn't thinking anything more about it. But it might have seemed very peculiar to him if I hadn't knocked the charge out on it, that his face, instead of being peaked and narrow, became flat. Of course, you know it can't become flat because it's composed of bones, and these bones don't do that. You can say the same way babies don't get born either, because obviously a baby's head can't possibly go through that. It's made out of bones. But that's more credible that a baby gets born then what does happen with regard to the body? Now, don't you go trying these things on somebody here for some little time, because I occasionally turned this datum loose, and I immediately had somebody go out and try to do it on somebody, and he didn't estimate. He missed one thing. He didn't estimate the aberrated condition of the subject. And so when he did it on the subject, he almost blew the subject out through the roof. And that's this. You can misplace a set of anchor points in the body in such a way as to make the joints bend in the wrong place. That's cute, isn't it? The joints don't bend and the bones don't bend in the right place. That's because the basic agreement of all this is on the subject of an electronic structure, not a structure of mass and electrons and atoms. We are dealing here, then, with an electronic structure which doesn't include atoms and molecules. There is the bridge between theta and mest, you might say. There is the gradient scale. It's the anchor points of the body. And now we have our problem laid before us very plainly. The viewpoint of dimension makes space. The space of the body is held in place, and the body holds itself there and materializes in the space of the body anchor points. When these points are in resonance with somebody else's points, you get a condition of mesmerism. And when you get a body in resonance, its anchor points in resonance with a wall, that is to say, pretty much the same wavelength, in other words, agreeing with mess, it will take on the characteristics of the wall to some degree. It'll become flat and so forth. When you get a body in complete agreement with a planet, it'll start taking on the characteristics of the planet itself. And it'll start feeling the gravity flows very heavily. But what do you have to do this? You have to get the anchor points of the body in agreement. What are these anchor points? And their optimum condition, they are gold spheres of various size, which either stand independently or in pairs, or in sheets, little gold spheres that make sheets. And these hang around in various parts of the body. Now, how many anchor points are there in a body? Actually, there are only as many important anchor points in the body as we used to count up control centers. Now, the anchor point is the control center. We're interested in the control center. We're interested in shifting controls on the body. Just shift that knowledge yourself over to handling of anchor points in the body. And now that you're omitting to do this, occasionally gets a non-exteriorization on the part of somebody. Why doesn't somebody exteriorize? He's trying to exteriorize out of what you could call, and too much of a word indeed, you could call it warp space. Its anchor points aren't in the right place, that's all. And he went in there one way, and now you're asking him to come out, and that route isn't there because there's no space there, and so on. They're complex for him. The anchor points are out of position. In anybody that is ailing, the anchor points are out of position. If a football player goes out on a football field and sprains his ankle, you as an auditor, whether you even talk to him or not, can simply snap that anchor point back into position, the sprain will disappear. How long will it take to disappear? Maybe 15, 20 seconds, if there's any time involved in it at all. So this is an important datum to you, isn't it? This is electronic structure. If you drew the picture of this structure, you'd see two big wing anchor points out there to the right and the left of the body, maybe 50 feet out, and you would see some more or less similar to those which handle the outer space of the body, and then we would have other sheets of them that make the planes of the body. Now, understand, these don't make up the mass of the body. These are the things that make the space in which the mass can appear. The mass isn't there any more than it is there. What we're dealing with is the electronic structure, and the electronic structure consists of these pins. All right, now there's a joint of the jaw. Now, this is a good mass object. It's made out of bone and gristle and hinge and so forth. Well, isn't it very strange that the jaw can get dislocated? Well, it gets dislocated and stays dislocated, by the way, and gets put back in together and heals very slowly because of one thing. The anchor point gets out of position, too. We used to say, which controls? Does the thought control structure or structure control thought? All right, we satisfactorily answered that some time ago. Thought controls structure. Now, how and what is the mechanic by which thought does control structure? Thought matches up anchor points or varies the wavelength or position of anchor points, which then controls structure, and that in itself is the bridge between thought and structure. Now, what is the bridge between you as a thetan and the body? And that structure is you as a thetan via the anchor points which you handle and mark up, via the anchor points of the body, and then we have the materialized mass of the body. Now, these anchor points are quite visible. If an individual cannot see these anchor points, you find out that he also can't see chairs and stoves and other things. I mean, he'll miss all kinds of items. And sometimes he doesn't see these because they are black. The energy has been drained out of them. In other words, he's agreed that energy can be exhausted, that he uses up energy when he moves. He's agreed on energy, you know. And he drains down these body anchor points to such a degree that they all go black and they're not big and gold anymore. Now, the color that they are varies then from gold down to black through green and tarnished and all sorts of other things like that. Now, the person has completely black anchor points. He is still able to use them, but after you've asked him to mock up gold anchor points around these black anchor points for a while, what do you know? His anchor points turn gold again. That is, his body's anchor points turn gold once more. Now, the person who can't see anchor points, if you ask him to mock up anchor points a few times or unmock them for a while and then mock them up, taking over an unmocking automaticity, and mock them up for a while, why, there sit the anchor points. And there they sit in plain sight. And he will see and know whether they are in or out of position. And when an anchor point is out of position in the jaw, a person has a somatic in the jaw. And when the anchor point is put back into position in the jaw, why, a person doesn't have a somatic in the jaw. And there's the end of all of these chronic somatics. How do you handle this body as a thetan? You vary these anchor points, and you move them from one spot to another, and that makes the body materialize, muscles move, and so forth, and then the body moves. And this is the made-up system by which a body moves. It moves via this electronic structure and pattern called anchor points. You're going to exteriorize many people. We're talking about exteriorization right now. Talking about it because, not because we want to repair bodies so much as you'll see these things, wonder what they are, and wonder why you should know anything about them. Well, it has a lot to do with exteriorization. People who don't exteriorize have too many anchor points out of position. Sometimes an individual will be found to have an anchor point back of his head or something that belongs in his head. It'll also be in fragments, and he'll collect the fragments together finally, squash them together, and put the anchor point back in its proper position in his head, and it'll go kind of click. And then all of a sudden you say, be 3 feet back of your head, and he's at step one. You can move an individual then from step four to step one simply by readjusting the anchor points of the body, and this is done by making him mock up lots of anchor points inside the body and outside the body and electronic patterns, in other words, patterns of anchor points. Let's mock up four and three and two and do other things with these anchor points and move them around and shove them around. And if he can't get an anchor point back, we have him move an anchor point, mock it up that can't get back, and mock it up and mock it up and mock it up, and then move it in a few times. And finally, he gets the idea. You throw his mock-ups away and move in the actual GE anchor point. This makes then a smooth piece of space inside the body. The person exteriorizes from it easily. Why doesn't a person exteriorize from the body? Well, mechanically, a low-order answer is his anchor points are out of position so that the body is actually a piece of warped space. Until you've adjusted these or he's adjusted them, nothing's going to happen with this exteriorization. You see that? Now, if you just took a wire net and you took a lot of little Christmas tree ornaments like gold balls, large ones and small ones, and you started to hang them around in this three-dimensional net that you have, and hang them up in pairs so one side balances the other side, you would get, after you'd hung up 1,000 or so, you would get a pretty rough idea of what the electronic system of the body looks like. That's what it looks like. That's at optimum. Nothing else in between except space. And that space is then occupied by the skin and the bones and so forth that you see. Now, a thetan varies the position of these things and thereby moves the body. That's the mechanical way of moving the body. He doesn't have to use that mechanical way of moving the body, by the way, but he does. All right, what's our problem then, Mr. Anthony? Our problem is aberration on the part of the preclear. This means non-straight lines. Well, you just turn that around and say it's non-straight anchor points. On exteriorization, you've got it. Very curious affair, these anchor points. But it only comes about that these anchor points become deranged when a person believes he has to depend upon food and the body for his energy. A thetan is as well off as he can create energy. He's no better off. And when he ceases to create energy and begins to depend upon, quote, old deposits of energy, which is a big joke, they aren't there either, when he begins to depend on these, quote, old deposits of energy, unquote, why, then he has to set up terminal systems so that he gets energy going from one point to another point and back and forth again so as to energize things and so on. He does this because he gets scarce on attention. Every once in a while, he'll set up a terminal, and it won't run unless he puts his attention on it. See? Well, as long as he does that, then he starts to set up terminal systems, and he sets these up in such a way that he's setting up batteries. So he'll set up a big mass of energy in front of the body, up against his face, the big mass of energy up against the back of the body, and these two masses of energy will discharge one against the other, and the body will use this energy. He might as well be creating it himself, because he's creating it anyway. He's having to mock and unmock those masses of energy before the body can use it. All right, so we have the problem of terminals, the second problem that comes in, and it is right there with anchor points. An individual then will start to use up the native energy in the GE anchor points. That is to say, he will use up the energy from the machine he's putting energy into to get these anchor points to burn up so as the body will run on its own energy. Did you ever see anybody, or did you yourself ever suddenly decide that, well, somebody else is going to do some work too? Well, if Satan sort of does this, he says, well, damn body, it's going to do some work too. And he'll set it up after that. He won't feed it enough energy to run. The next thing you know, it'll start eating up its own anchor points. It makes a battery out of them because they're masses of energy. All right, when we get a problem of this kind, the Thetan also has another problem. He has the problem of masses. And when we say terminal, we mean any end of a communication line. And we don't mean that it's even in good condition. And we don't even mean that it's naturally in its right place. We don't mean that it's mobile, or we don't mean that it's fixed. But we prefer it fixed in a place. And you think of a terminal as something that is more or less fixed. You just think of it like that. But a terminal can still be a terminal after it's been uprooted. The intention behind a terminal is to be fixed. But it doesn't cease to be a terminal just because it's unfixed. You get the idea. All right. Now, this terminal problem is a problem of energy exchanges. And if you were to set up two galvanic batteries of some sort or another and get energy flowing from one to the other back and forth, then you would have a supply of energy. And the Thetan who agrees with Mest thoroughly and has agreed with terminals and agreed with energy at large sets up these batteries, and back and forth it flows, and he isn't putting any energy into it, he thinks. He, of course, has to hand energy out the back door to make this system work at all, but he's looking there at the front door and finding everything is going along and that he's using up energy. So we have him dependent upon terminals, and we get this entire field then opens up to us dependency. There's conviction as a high-order datum. Now let's get another high-order datum right there with conviction, dependency, because dependency ensues after conviction. If you can convince somebody something exists, after that, to some slight degree, he will depend on it. And then his dependency on it becomes greater and greater, at which time, when his dependency is greatest, it will disappear. And that is a rule of this universe. Materialization of something succeeds or occurs after conviction. When one is convinced there is an isness, the next step is to depend on it. And the next step is for the thing to disappear. Because the moment a Satan says, I'm not causing this, he runs into the zero. There isn't anything else to cause it. So, of course, it disappears the moment he says, well, I'm depending on that now, it's cause. And the moment he says, it's cause, the thing unmocks. But this goes on a nice sliding scale. It's very gradual, and he doesn't immediately observe this. Now, what's that order again? That's an important order. That's your DEI scale, and that's your cycle of action, and that's everything else along this same line. So you could say there's a parallel curve to this cycle of action curve of the Mest universe of birth, growth, so forth. The Thetan creates something by being convinced that it exists, and then having become convinced that it exists, he depends upon it, and while depending upon it, he is gradually causing less and less himself until at the end he's causing nothing. He's total dependency, at which moment, of course, the thing unmocks and disappears. And that is the parallel curve to the cycle of action of the Mest universe. And it goes, conviction, dependency, unmarked. See that? Conviction, dependency, unmarked. So anytime an electronics man starts depending upon these batteries and all this nonsense around and so forth, why, he starts getting worse off and worse off and worse off. Actually, he gets as bad off as he depends upon the mesh universe to furnish energy for all the automatic things on which he's depending. Now, you've never found an electronics engineer in your life who wasn't using an awful lot of electronic gadgets in his living. They always do. And they get things pattern, squared around and squared around, and they cease. Little less livingness and a little less livingness in them and a little less livingness until at last they're practically gone and they kick the bucket and that's that. They don't live as long, by the way. And they also feel kind of degraded. Now, you think I'm beating these people to pieces as a class. I am not. I'm just using them as an extreme example of what happens. It's the only example we have of the extremity here on Earth. The number of these boys that are sane, I can count on the arms of an armless wonder. I know lots of them friends of mine. They're nuts. They hold their heads up, and the only thing that really balances them is the creative impulse. They keep creating. They keep creating. And they run this cycle at a short span. Soon as they've really created something, they know they've really created, and now they'll depend on it completely, they go like a puff of smoke. It's the fastest deterioration you ever looked at. A fellow by the name of Wiener, for instance. If you could know some of these people, this would actually have punches in it, because Wiener has glasses there that are at least a half an inch thick. No exaggeration. I mean, his eyes are just huge. He walks around with his nose way up, tilted way up in the air like this. And his body is practically planetary in shape. And he has terrible time. Life is just gruesome to this poor guy. Well, he did all right up to the time when he did cybernetics, and then when he did cybernetics, he'd done it. He'd had it then. And man, he hit that old toboggan slide like mad. And this is an example of a tremendously able Thetan who this life, anyway, has gotten into almost totality of agreement with the messed universe, and he stops functioning because the machine on which he's depending then begins to boss him around, and then it disappears or unmarks. It ceases to exist to some degree. So you see what an automaticity does? This is also the curve of automaticity. Conviction. You convince yourself you have the machine, then you depend upon the machine, and then the machine is caused to you as it persists. And then at length, of course, it finishes up by unmarking you. And that's the way it goes. And the people who are having real trouble with automaticity are having trouble with the unmarkers. Automatic machinery that they have installed to unmark things. I've run into this one in a pre-clear. If I ever get caught in the body again, well, I'll set up this machinery and this machinery. If I ever get caught in the body again or ever get caught in the theta trap, this machine will now unmark the theta trap. And we start marking this fellow up. You get him to mark things up, he can't mark anything up. You say, mark up a body, it disappears. Mark up a body, it disappears. I mean, he can't even get it up before it's gone. And we fool around with this and fool around with this until, gee, it becomes obviously apparent he hasn't got a body. And it's sort of not there. It's missing. And yet he's resisting something which is about to make it into a complete zero. And he knows something is about to destroy it, and he can't tell you what is going to destroy it, but he knows something is. It's either going to be Western Union or the U.S. government, or somebody's going to destroy this body. And he gets real spooky about it one way or the other. Well, if you start to run him on, I have just one example here. I ran this fellow on, all right. I said, now make the postulate, any time I get into trouble, I'm going to unmark the body I am in and disappear. Well, that wasn't quite it. It was any time I get into a body or a trap, this machine will make it disappear. And that was the exact postulate of the machinery. And it was holding an energy charge which exploded in front of his face the second that it was triggered. A big energy charge. Pow! You know, kind of made his hair stand up and his eyebrows flicker and made him duck back. And it was an audible explosion, in other words. You know, pow! Now, that's a very interesting thing, isn't it? He set this thing up. Where was this man's energy going? It was going surreptitiously by bypass circuits all around Robin Hood's barn and coming back in the front of his face and was charging up a machine which was just above his head. The modus operandi of the machine exactly was that it was going to drop an electronic beam with such speed down across the front of the body that it was going to take the face off. And that, of course, would be the end of the body, and it was just going to chew up any trap he got into. Oh, this is real gorgeous. That man was the victim of that machine, but it was his machine. The case entirely changed its complexion after this was audited, and this only required about 3 or 4 minutes to audit. Case Charlie changed. With that much charge sitting up in front of his face, he, of course, couldn't keep any GE anchor point anywhere in position. They were all out of position. And any time he could see one or try to put it back in position or something like that, it would just go slap someplace else. There was too much charge sitting around. In other words, all this man's creativeness was being fed into a machine which would uncreate. And that is the normal course of automaticity. The thetan's creativeness never decreases. It is fed into machinery, which he no longer owns or has any responsibility for. The energy potential is always there, but it's going someplace else that he's lost control of. You give him control of his own energy potential, and you'll have a lightning bolt on your hands like a breeze. But how do you do this? You do it by taking control of the individual's machinery. People who can't get out of their body have gone into a quarrel with the body, which has put some energy charge around the body, which has warped the GE anchor points, which then make it impossible for them to get out of the space because the space is now the wrong space. You can just put it down like that as a cycle of action. You've got automaticity now tied up with charge and machines and so on. Now, communication works this way. It has two terminals. And communication is just the same in an electric motor as it is spoken. The same theory we're using. In other words, an impulse that goes from A and goes to B. You know, no matter how fast it does it or how many times it comes back, we have fulfilled our definition of communication. Communication is a sense or a particle traveling from A to B. We don't even care how crooked or straight the line is. It just goes between two points. Now, you've got a system. A communication system can have lots of relays in it. It goes from A to A prime, to A prime prime, to A prime prime prime, to A prime 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 prime, to B prime 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 prime, to B prime prime prime, to B prime prime, to B prime, to B. Each one of those could be a Western Union relay station, or it could be a person you gave a message to give to somebody else. Now, people just won't duplicate worth a nickel. They don't like duplication. They have superstitions about it. On the second dynamic, they have an awful lot of morals about it. And we have a whole category here in duplication as we look it over. It's the willingness or unwillingness to duplicate which makes a person able or unable to reproduce his own kind. Now, let's take a line of soldiers. We'll give the first soldier the message, the 0 hour is midnight, and have it whisper it to him, and he turns around and he whispers it to the second soldier, and this soldier whispers it to the next soldier, and we get down at the other end of the line. By the time it's gone through about 30 soldiers, the odd part of it is that the message, which will come out at the other end, is almost uniformly completely different. It's something on the order of the captain wants his horse. Yep, if that were a perfect communication line, the 0 hour is midnight would have emerged at the other end. But every one of those persons would have had to have been in good condition. If they'd been in real good condition, they simply would have passed it down the line. Now, if they'd been complete slaves and hypnotized, it would have come out at the other end of the line much more distorted. That's an interesting point. So everybody tries to escape aberration by fighting duplication. You know, don't act crazy like the little boy down your street. Did your mother ever say, don't ever start talking like that little boy now, or your speech will get all upset? And don't you start acting like that tough little fellow. That was a sure way of sooner or later making you into a tough little fellow, telling you what to resist. All right, now if you'd been good at taking direction from your mother and you weren't resisting your mother's command, you could have done that with great ease. That could have been done with great ease. Your duplication could have been done with great ease. You see, you had to resist your mother's command of not be like the little boy down the street in order to turn around and compulsively try to be like the little boy down the street. In other words, here's duplication in terms of orders. A thetan gets his randomity by refusing to duplicate. He'll get his sanity back by restoring his ability to duplicate. That's all there is to it. You never saw in your life a person aberrated, for instance, on duplication on the second dynamic. You never saw a person aberrated on the second dynamic who had no suppression on the second dynamic. For instance, you could go out and look in vain in the animal kingdom, which has very little suppression on the second dynamic, for real nuttiness on the second dynamic. Neither would you find them obsessively trying to duplicate. You know, they don't go mad on the subject. You don't get your compulsive reactions, obsessive reactions. If you'll just take some animal, however, and make it very, very, very difficult for him to duplicate sexually, you after a while will have created a satyr or some other type of sexual aberration in the animal. You follow that? Well, let's take that right up on the line there. Let's take it on up to groups. Now, if you're obsessively trying not to be a Rosicrucian, and so forth, or if you're obsessively trying not to be the Roman Catholic Church or something, you'll find yourself sliding little by little, step by step, into being the Roman Catholic Church because you didn't want to be it. And the last dregs of your skid will be hopeless indeed. Oh, you can just go real mad on this. Now let's take it on the subject of the sixth dynamic, the messed universe, and let's get a fellow resisting being or agreeing with the messed universe. He won't duplicate it, of course, and the more he tries not to duplicate it, the more obsessively he duplicates it, until he couldn't stand up and face a stove without being a stove. Now he's set up a machine which makes it impossible for him to duplicate something. In essence, he set it up as an automaticity, I will not duplicate, and of course sooner or later the machine will turn around and butcher him up enough to a point where he obsessively duplicates. That's just on this same curve I was talking to you about, conviction, and so on, as we go right straight down the line. Now, that point might have escaped you a little bit. How a machine set up to do something automatically eventually winds up by doing the opposite. No, it doesn't wind up by doing the opposite. It winds up as your randomity, and then you realize something is forcing you to do something, and you actually will be sensible enough to try somehow or another to key out the machine by doing it in present time in the messed universe. In other words, you try to dramatize the machine out of existence. And this is the only therapy the thetan has had, dramatization. Things don't work out well in the messed universe, though. They just don't work out well. They don't undramatize. For instance, a fellow has a compulsion to kill his wife, and he kills her, and by golly, it doesn't get rid of the compulsion. In fact, they gas chamber him or something. The messed universe is dead set on no duplication. Scarcity is its motto. Yet at the same time, by all the waves that come in beating you, you'd think, by golly, it was set on duplication. It's telling you all the time, be me, be me, be me. Don't be anybody else. Be me. And there you're caught on a 360-degree sphere. It's coming in from every side. Now let's talk about that for a moment. The thetan is being bombarded as soon as he gets into his idea about flows. As soon as he's completely sold on flows, he thereafter is bombarded on a 360-degree sphere. Up to the time where he doesn't pay any attention to or monkey with a wavelength or trouble with flows to amount to anything, why, he's perfectly free. If there's anything there, it'd go through him anyhow. And he doesn't worry about it. But the second he begins to resist these flows, agree that they exist, is to resist. Why? Because they reduce his size. They pound him into one spot. And they make him smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, he thinks. Well, that's the phenomenon of flow.
and it comes in from 360 degrees. It doesn't go much the other way except by reflection. It hits something he has, and it reverses and goes the opposite direction. So people will get an incoming flow and then try to stop it as it leaves. They don't want people to see them. For instance, sunlight hits them. That shows an image of them at somebody else, and they'll try to stop this image going. Well, they're actually trying to keep the image from coming in, but they don't pay any attention to it and don't try to stop those photons until they've bounced, because they're already into a communication lag. It causes inversion. After a while, this person tries to push something away and the thing comes to him in a mock-up. Everything gets reversed. That's an inversion. Do you see how this would be? A fellow gets hit with a bullet and then doesn't let the bullet fly away from him, simply because he's holding the bullet from coming in. He holds the bullet from going out. See that? Now, the essence of it is he's holding. Now, it becomes immediately clear. What's he doing? He's holding. Well, as soon as a fellow tries to keep waves from hitting him or destructive things from hitting him, he's holding. And as soon as he's holding, he begins to build up all sorts of things. He makes them up so he can build them up. Now, what do we got here? Little problem, doesn't amount very much. It has to do with agreement to the messed universe, agreement on flows, agreement on photons, and all that sort of thing. That's why we say, with truth, where are you not in positioning in the messed universe? The other isn't true. Where are you? It only apparently becomes true because the messed universe itself has dichotomies. So we ask the fellow, where are you not? Of course, the answer is he's no place in the messed universe. And he'll eventually just run that out, and if you kept this up long enough, he'd realize, just like you say, give me three people you are not. Well, if you ask this in brackets, three people somebody else is not, and so on, and three people that somebody else knows somebody else is not, why, we go around and around on this in brackets, the next darn thing, you know, why, we'd have a very interesting condition. The fellow would also know he wasn't his own body. But we wouldn't have had to have even vaguely intimated to this person that he could exteriorize. Now, how long do we have to keep up this technique in order to do it? Well, I don't know, but it's an hours and hours and hours proposition. It's not 10 minutes or 15 minutes. It's a long process. Most every one of the steps of SOPHC are themselves a totality. You know, if you just did them, if you did that step, and you did it long enough, it would do the job. And the reason we have that number of steps is try to hit the present time problem, and I'm going to say something very briefly on the present time problem, very briefly indeed. And that is to say, there's hardly a pre-clear around who doesn't have a present time problem, and until that present time problem is solved, their attention is not free enough to process anything else. Their attention is all bound up on a present time problem, and you are trying to process them in some other direction, unless you do something about the present time problem with creative processing or mock-ups or duplication, or unmarking, or creating automaticities, or and uncreating, doing something about this present-time problem. In other words, their attention doesn't free. And that's usually the case with the pre-clear. And where an auditor misses the boat is he doesn't realize the pre-clear is a living being, and he doesn't start right in, right at the beginning, and solve the pre-clear as a specialized stack of phenomena. The pre-clear is a specialized stack of phenomena. And there's one of them lying on top. And you want to solve a case real easy. You'll do it eventually. But if you want to solve a case very easily, what you do is pick the one off the top. And then you pick the next one off that, so on. Another remark I'd like to make to you is that which is validated comes true. If you will validate something too long or too often, why, it has itself then a sort of a truth. You keep validating walls or validating corners without ever running unmocking barriers, the guy will first get better and better, and then he'll tip off the edge and get kind of worse and worse. What you missed there was the nothingness side of the somethingness. So let's not validate barriers without invalidating barriers. Let's not validate problems without invalidating problems. And let's run a matched balance on the case in that fashion. And I don't want that one to escape you. If you were to ask somebody to stand over against that wall for a year, pushing against it, he would decide at the end of the year that he could do nothing else. You validated the wall. Boy, would he be sure that wall is there. it very often happens that you have to make a pre-clear sure the wall is there. And one more thing, certainty is still the keynote. If your pre-clear is being processed and isn't certain of any of the things he's saying or anything else, he's not going to get any place. He's not going to change. And one more thing, remember the guy's name. He is being this symbol. Move it around, move it around. Walk that name up and move it around until it's meaningless. That's the best process with which to handle it. He's being a symbol, and very often this symbol itself is the clue to his case. It's the one symbol that's been with him longest and oftenest. He's trying to be his name. Okay?